Hi, I'm Carl Azus. Less than 2 weeks from Election Day in America, the big question is who will lead the country? And we're not just talking about the presidency. In the House of Representatives, lawmakers serve two-year terms. So all 435 voting seats are up for election on November 8th. In the Senate, lawmakers serve six-year terms, and 34 Senate seats are up for election next month. Here's what the balance of power looks like right now. In the House, Republicans have control with 246 seats. Democrats have 186 seats. There are three vacancies. In the Senate, Republicans have control with 54 seats. 46 seats are considered Democratic. There are two independents in the Senate, but they usually vote with the Democrats. No one knows yet if control of either chamber will change hands in this election. But because Republicans have a smaller majority in the Senate, analysts say Democrats have a better chance of gaining control there, and Republicans have a better chance of keeping control in the House. But again, this all comes down to how Americans vote. Why this matters? It's easier for presidents to accomplish their goals when Congress is controlled by their own party. The opposing party is more likely to act as a check on the president's power and can put more limits on what a president can do. An issue that politicians are discussing on the campaign trail is the Affordable Care Act, also called Obamacare. It's a major reform of the U.S. healthcare system that President Obama signed in 2010. It's considered his signature achievement, and it contributed to a record number of Americans having health insurance. But Obamacare's also had a number of problems. One of them, announced earlier this week, is a 25% average increase in premiums, what people pay for an insurance policy. It applies to one major Obamacare plan, and it'll take effect next year. The government says most of those who are enrolled will receive subsidies, government money, to help out with the cost increases. But that'll make the program more expensive for the federal government. Another issue, fewer insurance companies plan to offer Obamacare next year. That'll leave people with fewer choices for insurance. Why is all this happening? One big reason is that the people who've signed up have more health problems than companies expected, making costs higher, and that not enough young, healthy people have enrolled in Obamacare to balance that out.
The battle to oust ISIS from Mosul is what military experts would call asymmetric warfare. That means adversaries with very different capabilities facing off against one another. On the one hand, you have around 50,000 Iraqi security forces and about as many militias and Kurdish troops. They're also backed by U.S.-led artillery and advisors, and of course, massive coalition air power. On the other hand, you have around 5,000 ISIS fighters, but they are entrenched. The coalition's strategy is to use superior manpower, firepower, and technology to throw ISIS out of Mosul. For its part, ISIS is trying to bog down the invading forces and use guerrilla tactics to slow them down. For instance, the terror group has dug a web of tunnels to escape airstrikes and to move around the battlefield without being exposed to some of the heavy weapons the Iraqi security forces are using. They're also employing roadside bombs and a lot of suicide car bombers to not only slow the advancing Iraqi forces down, but to try and demoralize them as well. In some cases, ISIS has managed to sneak back into towns already taken by the Iraqi military, so holding and securing areas will be a big priority. While ISIS has inferior technology and, of course, much less manpower, combat in densely populated urban areas always favors the defenders.
And that's why a few thousand ISIS terrorists are able to fight back at all against a force of around 100,000 advancing international troops. The city of Mosul is expected to be ISIS's last stand in the Middle Eastern country of Iraq. The terrorists still have a stronghold in Syria, but a defeat in the Iraqi city would limit their territory and strength. As it's retreated from the towns around Mosul, ISIS has used civilians as human shields. It's returned to liberated areas to kill residents in revenge, and it's doing all it can to leave disaster burning in the wake of its retreat.
It could almost be waves rippling against a shoreline on another planet. Neon streams catching the light. But this hauntingly beautiful scenery is toxic. The yellow rock formations are raw sulfur, crumbling and melting under intense heat. It may look volcanic, but this is man-made.
When ISIS withdrew from the sulfur factory, they placed explosives inside what was a massive mountain of sulfur, sending toxic, poisonous fumes into the air.
Hundreds of people living in the area had to seek medical attention for trouble breathing, burning eyes, and choking. Hospitals ran out of oxygen.
I have no idea how the vast majority of these workers out here are able to deal with the smell and the burning in one's eyes without having proper protection. Most people out here don't have gas masks on, but they are working tirelessly to try to bring this under control.
Across this otherworldly landscape, there are bulldozers, firefighters trying to stifle the flames with loads of dirt. This is a battlefield that has no rules or boundaries.
And this is just one of the many ways that ISIS is trying to use whatever it possibly can to try to not only impede the advance of the security forces towards Mosul, but also in doing so, cause maximum damage and maximum impact on the civilian population.
Now continuing our two-part series on video games. Yesterday we looked at some possible mental and physical downsides of gaming. Now for a possible upside. Can video games' ability to stimulate certain areas of your brain be harnessed to give us better performing brains?
People who play video games actually see more than the rest of us. They make better and faster use of visual input, according to a recent Duke University study. What if we could all benefit from this? The goal is for doctors to one day prescribe video games like they would a medicine. Think controllers instead of pills. And this might not be too far off. Meet AJ. He's a research associate in Adam Ghazali's lab at UCSF. You can see he's healthy as a horse, but Adam's plan is to push AJ's brain beyond its limits, to give him cognitive abilities that are almost superhuman.
Yeah, so basically I'm just going to be doing what we call a visual search. I'm just going to be looking for a target object amongst a bunch of distractors, and I'm going to be using physical movements to respond to the correct target.
So this is AJ. He's playing this game, as you can see behind me. He's also all wired up. That's EEG monitoring. Take a look at the game on this screen. But I think more importantly is this over here. This is actually AJ's brain as he's playing the game. You see the brain, but you also see what's happening inside the brain as a result of that EEG monitoring.
What makes the glass brain so revolutionary is not just the real-time 3D visualization with a lag time of just 0.2 of a second, but also something known as a feedback loop. That's the ability of the game to use the data streaming out of AJ to optimize the game engine itself. Too easy? The game gets harder. Too difficult? It lets up a bit.
So back here, for example, is an area of the brain that's typically responsible for vision. Mm-hmm. So if someone's not, you're not seeing as much frequency or activity back there, the game may change in response to that?
Exactly, and the rewards would change in response to that. And when they do bring on that activity at a high level, they get rewarded.
Dog meat balloons. Now pop them to pieces. This is the handiwork of Twinkie the Jack Russell Terrier. I can't decide if she really loves or really hates balloons, but she's really good at popping them. Twinkie took home the 2016 Guinness World Record for a dog popping 100 balloons in the shortest time, 39.8 seconds. And Twinkie's mother, Anastasia, actually holds a previous world record for popping balloons. So it's no balloony to say the family's just full of hot air. The animal herself may be a little balloony, maybe the balloons just rub her the wrong way, but when she embarks on her mission, she doesn't tarry her, she has a blast. And as any balloon will tell you, her bite is worse than her bark. I'm Carl Azuz, and these puns have left me deflated.